Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Heart to Health Talk. I'm Zixin.
And I'm Sheng Hao. Previously, we discussed pandemic fatigue and adjusting to a new normal.
Today, we dive deeper into how the pandemic has affected life at home and what we're doing to adapt.
I want to bring us back to COVID and what you did during that time. Apart from crocheting, I think there was this YouTuber that was going viral during that period. You know Chloe Ting? And she did home workout videos and all that. Did you end up doing a lot of exercise at home also?
Honestly, no.
No shame.
Okay. My brothers did. Like, they would turn on the TV and they would roll their yoga mats on the floor. And okay, I have an older brother who's 2 years older than me. And I have a younger brother who's 10 years younger than me. So we literally have, like, these two people sprawled across the living room, just like, yeah, doing, like, planks and all that sit-ups. And then I'm like, what is this? And they're like, join us. And I'm like, no. Yeah, but okay, but it's a personal thing where I don't enjoy doing, like, statics. Guys will hate me, okay? Because for me, I enjoy doing things with movement. So during Circuit Breaker, I was really thankful that we were allowed to still go outside and run, keeping safe distance and all. So something that I did daily during Circuit Breaker was to run in the morning.
Wow, that's a really healthy habit.
How early was this? Like 5 a.m. morning?
You would go before your clinicals, right?
And during that time, lessons were still happening. So I could have an 8 a.m. lesson. And so in that way, I would go running at like 6. But I think it's a habit lah. Like, I personally enjoy running in the morning because if you wake up early enough, you can see stars in Singapore. Not seeing stars because you wake up too early and you're just so darn tired. But no, you can really see stars, like constellations in Singapore. And yeah, that's if you wake up at like 5. Otherwise, I will wake up at like 6 or 7 during that time, use Circuit Breaker to run in the morning. And then afterwards, I'll just like chill at home the whole day. And then in the evening, if I'm feeling in the mood, I'll run again. Yeah, that was my routine during Circuit Breaker. So for my brothers, they would exercise in the evening during their statics. While for my parents, like my mom and dad, they would head out to probably go for a walk.
Sounds like your whole family was keeping busy though. Like during the whole Circuit Breaker fair, everybody was keeping up with their physical activity.
I think it's a family culture thing. Like exercise to my family is pretty important. Like, we enjoy doing physical activities, I would say. It's like a habit that they pass down to my brothers and I.
So I guess with two brothers and then your parents, that is quite a big household, no? It must be very noisy, especially like during Circuit Breaker, right? Because a few months at home, with everybody at home, right? I'm guessing your brothers will also be studying at home. And then your parents also might be working from home.
Mm-hmm. It was. And I can add on and say that during that time, both my maternal grandmas actually moved in with me. So there was a total of 7 people in the household.
Any pets?
Yes, I have dogs. So there were 7 people and a couple of animals living in the household.
I have no idea how you managed.
Honestly, it was not easy because one of the grandmas that moved in had dementia. And so because it was Circuit Breaker, the daycares were closed. So she couldn't go and things were really disruptive. And I would say that caregiver stress is really something that is very, very real. And so my heart really goes out to all those families back then who were struggling in their own ways, be it financially or even like looking after their loved ones or being unable to visit their loved ones because of Circuit Breaker. It really was a very, very tough time. I would say that living with someone with dementia is really not easy. I can give you a few examples. There were times where we were cooking and she would just turn off the pot. Because to her, the pot looked like it was going to explode. And so after that, we'll be wondering, why is our food not cooking? And you realize, oh, because she off the pot. And my grandmother has a tendency to hog tissue paper. And considering how everybody was like tissue paper hogging during Circuit Breaker, it was pretty bad. We would run out of tissue paper, like the big packet, within a week. And if we went to her room, she would literally like take tissue paper from the shelf and shove it in her cupboard. But it's because she's losing touch with the ability to remember. And so she has this tendency to want to hold on to things because it makes her feel secure. And for her case, holding on to something as basic as tissue paper gives her that security. So that's why she had that tendency to hog it. And she doesn't want anyone to take it away from her. So when we found out that, oh, she had been stealing stuff from around the house and keeping it in different places, it was really hard to reculture her to our family because she just moved in from her old house to stay with us. And so it was really quite tough considering we had to work from home. And there's this sundown syndrome that happens to people with dementia. Things really were not easy, lah. And everyone was just trapped in one household. So exercise kind of helped in a sense where it kind of relieved everyone's mood. It gave us a reason that we could leave the house for a breather for a while. And at the same time, to keep up our fitness as well. So really, my heart again goes out to the caregivers. Even now, when I'm working in the hospital on my attachment from heightened alert, they had to make specific requests just for the helper to be able to stay by the patient's bedside. Otherwise, no one was allowed to come up to visit the patient aside from visiting hours. So one of my patients actually suffers from panic attacks and her helper will be there by her side. And I would just imagine if her helper wasn't there, how scary it might have been without someone familiar being with you. So in all these different circumstances, COVID has really made it very tough. That's why it goes back to having that extra empathy, the extra kindness, because you never know, someone might be having a very, very bad day because of a situation that they can't control.
I think that really sums up a lot of what everyone was feeling during COVID, where there's this sense of control because now you can't control where you work, you can't control how you relax, you can't control how you interact with your family also sometimes. Because tensions rise and get heated up.
That personal space, especially during circuit breaker, was really something that I would say that my family took for granted lah. Because now we're all in the same household. But it's not like we don't want to spend time with each other. It's just things are different. And so it was a very interesting feeling when like there was a point in time during circuit breaker, everyone was just in their rooms doing their own thing. And last time you'd be like, why are you always in your room? And now it's like, it's fine to be in your room. Yeah, like for a long period of time because everybody needs that space. And so it's that added empathy that you put out there to really just learn to understand when things are hard.
I kind of understand what you mean too though, because for me, I stay with two other siblings and my parents and a helper. So during circuit breaker, everyone was working from home and everyone was studying. And physically, I felt that, okay, you know, like space is there. But we started to realize that physical space was very much tied to our emotional health or like mental health. Because just having a physical space where you can compartmentalize into, okay, I'm going to school, that is where I study. And I come home and this is where I relax. But now everybody was home and all our domains were mixed up. And it got really frustrating for everybody sometimes, especially when we were all trying to use the internet together and something happened and like there's no internet. Similar to you, my family, at least not for me, but for my parents, for them, they would do this daily walk just to get away from the house for a little bit to also ease the tensions at home. It was a really good way during circuit breaker to try to get your physical activity hours in and also to diffuse tensions at home.
Oh, you reminded me of something as well. During circuit breaker, like I really caught up with some of my friends over Zoom and all, and they mentioned something about how the boundaries were being blurred. Like, what is work-life balance? Because now you're working from home, technically, your home is your office. And in a sense, when does work end? Because your computer is technically right next to you. I mean, you can be as simple as, like, I can leave my laptop at work. So technically, if I come home, I don't have my laptop. I can't do anything. But now, the boundary is blurred. And so my friend was sharing with me that how you really need to know when to give yourself space, when you need to tell yourself, okay, I need a break. Like, I've been striving at work from 7 to maybe now, let's say it's 5, and I should give myself a break. Although I do have things to get done, my laptop's right in front of me, but I need to ensure that mentally I'm feeling okay. And it can get very tough because really now my room is my office. So I felt that was an interesting concept to explore. And yet seeing my friends who are suffering from this work from home fatigue, it was really quite sad. But on the contrary, I also had friends who were like, oh my gosh, I love working from home. Like my mental health has just like become so much better. It saves so much having time. I went for my checkup and the doctor was like, you seem so much better. And my friend was like, yeah, I think it's the working from home. But conversely, I also have friends like, I don't want to work from home. I want to go back to the office, please. Yeah, so that's why it's non-comparable. And so the fact that it's non-comparable no one can really say that like anyone is in a better shoe than another person, so just show kindness.
I wonder if from, let's say, you know, like your boss's perspective, they will prefer you to be probably in person in the office, right? Because I'm guessing they might associate working from home with decreased productivity, or at least because, you know, if they can't physically monitor you or just can't really keep track of when you're working or what you're working on, rather than, you know, let's say if you just deliver like end of the day sort of progress report or whatever deliverable you have, right? So I guess in a way, maybe for the boss, they will prefer that you work from office like as per normal, but maybe for, you know, us employees, it's clearly split, right?
I think it depends on the job scope and what is the kind of content that is created. Also, it goes down to the meets and greets of internal relations between the staff and yeah, like how much they trust that, oh, okay, they don't need constant monitoring. And personally, I don't have much of an opinion on this because most of the job experiences that I have is very much on the ground. Like, I can't do nursing as work from home. I really wonder how that works. But yeah. So it's very hard for me to say lah, but I would think that bosses, it would be hard for them to keep track of how their employees are doing. But at the same time, I think it also becomes very pertinent for the employers to also keep track of their employees' mental health. I'm not sure if companies actually, like, they had greater emphasis on mental health of their employees. Can't think of it. That's actually super important, in fact. Because work from home has really diversely affected a lot of people in many different ways, really based on how the background of each person is different. So I wonder if the employers now had to consider not just whether KPIs are hit, but at the same time, are my employees doing fine? And in that case, what were the employers doing? Now that's something to think about. Yeah.
Actually, on that topic, a previous guest of ours, Miss Anthea Ong, former NMP, I think a couple of weeks ago, she wrote an article in Channel News Asia. She leads a group called C-Suite Leaders that are trying to promote sort of a top-down mental wellness approach, sort of advocating for more inclusivity amongst employers and also promoting awareness of mental health in the workplace.
Ooh.
Just some of the statistics that she also brought up in her article was that based on last year, there was an increase in amount of help-seeking behavior. There are more calls to mental health hotlines. And also, they also observed some disparities in help-seeking behaviors. For example, you know, younger people and especially male were less likely to seek help. And for example, suicide hotlines as well. They also observe an increase in the number of calls.
Mm.
So just an example of that would be that last year, they set up a national care hotline. I'm not sure if it's been manned 24/7, but basically it's manned by officers that offer mental health first aid. And I think the statistic as of last year, 2020, was that they already received 30,000 calls. And I think another one was recently the Ministry of Social and Family Development. They also launched a 24-hour national anti-violence helpline. So that is more for issues like, let's say, intimate partner violence and domestic violence, right? So using this hotline, the public can also report cases of family violence, neglect, or abuse, right? So I think, you know, as sort of like a response to all this increase in help-seeking behavior, we have also seen all these different hotlines, these different resources that are being offered and also increased as a response to that. So I guess I would be optimistic at least about the amount of resources that are currently being pushed out to meet this demand, right, for help.
And I'm very, very thankful that we, all these social services have really rolled out all these hotlines to help people at such a time. And because you're making me think back about like during circuit breaker, how things were really like. And because for me, my personal experience was the caregiver stress of my grandmother. And because she moved in very recently and also with all her behaviors of getting used to our household's culture and everything, it had sparked some tension. And it's really, really hard to reason with someone with Alzheimer's because her logic is not the logic that someone who is sound-minded, for lack of a better word, would see it. Yet, we want to understand her. But at the same time, it's also very hard because she is sadly not really herself anymore. She would throw tantrums. She would shout. She would raise her voice. And she would steal things even when she doesn't get her way. So it's like she had regressed to the behavior of a child who's throwing tantrum. And so when things really got very hard to reason with, I would see that my parents get really very frustrated. And yet they were working from home as well. With that pent-up stress and the need to care for the household, me, my siblings, my grandmothers, I could see that it was taking a toll on their mental health. I mean, they may not say it, but it was definitely visible. Like, the level of patience is like, you can tell, it has shortened. It's much easier to tick them off compared to in the past. And tantrums really flared. It really got quite tough, lah. And so imagine if this is what is happening, this is what I personally experienced. Many other households, I believe, had their own fair share of all these domestic troubles. And so with these helplines, I think it's a really good thing that the social services have really stepped out to offer and avail a safe space for people to reach out to, because it really isn't easy.
I think this really ties back to the importance of having a strong support system, right? So even, for example, if your immediate family is your usual support system or the first support system that you will turn to, but you know, given the restrictions of COVID and a circuit breaker where that same support system is being strained, there seems like there are also some alternative support systems that we can turn to as well.
Mm.
And it's really like a whole ecosystem in a way that where everybody needs to learn to be empathetic towards each other and also to really try to understand from their perspective as well.
And another thing that I really give thanks for is how fast everybody was turning to online to really like keep up and to catch up with friends. And I'm thankful that there's all these online platforms that we could still keep in contact with each other. Because like when you mentioned about the support system, I just thought to myself that, oh my, if I was unable to at least catch up with my friends over like Zoom, things would really get very tough because I don't see them, they don't see me. It's like that connection is just cut. And you reminded me of another thing where literally during circuit breaker, studying for finals, we couldn't go out. I literally Zoomed my friends from like 7 all the way to like 12 midnight every single day. Because if circuit breaker wasn't there, we'd study together in the library and we'd go and have lunch together and continue to study all the way. But that can't happen anymore. And so you'll be like, okay, tomorrow, 8 a.m., Zoom, wake me up. And then like, you'll see people entering the Zoom chat and then be like, hi, okay. And then we start my game. And then if someone has a question, hey guys, can I ask y'all something? Then we are, huh? And then, like, someone will share their screen and be like, who would y'all answer this question? Why is the answer that? Then we all discuss and everybody, okay. Then we mute our mics again. And we start studying. Suddenly someone will be like, I have another question. And then the next day it just happens again. Yeah, so come to think of it, really a way to cope with all that. And plus how like Netflix just released a whole bunch of movies and then we downloaded Just Dance and they're like, come, we give you unlimited for free. You can dance to like your heart's content for one whole month. Yeah, all these small little things, it really helped to pass the time, to ease the tensions. And I was really, really thankful for all these small tokens that companies gave. And how technology enabled me to still stay in touch with my friends despite it all.
I actually had a similar experience. I felt that the experience of having this social support system was also something that I experienced because during the circuit breaker period when everybody was like not able to physically meet and everything, I thought it was really nice that calling people up, just calling them up and saying, hey, can we talk for an hour kind of thing? Or like, can I catch up with like what's happening in your life? Was something that became more normalized. Because previously, it's like you either text someone to arrange a meetup, yeah, or you will just meet them in real life. But during that period of time, you could just, I think there was house party, there was Zoom. I even learned how to use Discord so that I could hang out with my friends who would normally game on Discord, but I'll just hang in the lounge and listen to them play their games for that little bit of social interaction. Yeah. So I think, yes, it was, and it still is very important to have all these social support systems for you to rely on when you're in times of trouble.
Speaking of Discord, right? Discord has so many functions that I don't know why, you know, like schools or institutions just refuse to use it. Just because, you know, there's this label that is a gamer platform or like a streamer platform. If you just give it a try, I think you'll really be surprised the sheer number of functions that it has that you just don't want to go back to like Zoom or Google Meets. It's just, it's superior. That's the end of the story. Yeah.
Can I say something? I don't know how to use Discord. Like, I have all thumbs when it comes to technology. To be fair, I have used Discord like twice because I had to plan an event with some of my friends for my church ministry, and they were like, let's use Discord. And the first time I heard that, I was like, what? Discord? What is that? Yeah, and honestly, using it for the first few times, I felt that it wasn't the most user-friendly. But I think mine is just a biased opinion because it was quite new to me, and I was like, well, let me just use Zoom. But it's true, like, I do agree that Discord, it's different. It provides more function. It's just that I didn't have the time to explore. Mm. Yeah, and plus, I don't really game. So there's not really much of a need for me to explore it.
So it seems like we kind of talked about a few different main pointers, I think. We started off by talking about the whole idea of pandemic fatigue and how, like, Singaporeans or even for us, how we're adjusting to this new normal. And I think we also touched upon some different new activities, whether that's physical or hobbies or whether, you know, we turn that into like a part-time job as well, right? And also the importance of our support systems, right? Sort of whether that is our immediate family or whether that's our friends online, studying with our friends that you mentioned, and also maintaining our social networks. And coincidentally, I just happened to look up the WHO, that's a World Health Organization, recommendations for dealing with the COVID pandemic. And these are three of the four top recommendations that they mentioned. So I guess, you know, as far as we are managing, it seems that, you know, we are keeping up fairly well as well. The last one that we haven't really talked about is what they call people first language. So I guess to illustrate the example would have been calling the variant the Delta variant instead of, you know, for example, the Indian variant or coming from India or South Asia, right? So I think sort of changing the names of the variants was very deliberate, right? Because they wanted to remove the attachment to the origin and also to avoid, for example, any kind of labeling, right? Because that would be very problematic in many different ways.
It goes back to the not calling it like the Wuhan virus, but calling it the coronavirus.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think down the road, these names will be, for lack of a better phrase, locked in history. Because this pandemic is really something. And its name, the coronavirus, the variants are going to brought up in many literatures to come down the road, its effects, how it has shaped the world and the economy from this point in time, its name is going to be really prominent.
So having a more understanding of people first nomenclature or naming system for the virus would be very helpful for setting the tone for all these different articles and papers that come from this era.
And I believe that it sounds more professional and it can be used as a better lingo for the scientific community to verbalize and to communicate with each other. Yeah.
I think this is a very nice lull in the conversation where we can wrap up things. Is there anything else, last things that you'd like to add, Phoebe?
I'm good. Like, thank you for having me. And it was really refreshing conversation. You're making me think back to, dang, how much things have changed since the very beginning of Circuit Breaker till now. And I think we should be proud of ourselves, how far each one of us has come to adapt to so many new changes. Like, really, no one has it easy. I'm proud of us in our own small ways, how we have overcome, and things definitely will be different. It's just a matter of how we adapt again, no?
This reminded me of the grandparents sitting on the rocking chair telling the grandchildren the story. You know, like, well, you know what, in my day, there was this CB that I couldn't leave my house. Yeah, that I picked up, you know, making crochets and I sold them on Carousell, you know.
And the kids are going to be like, what is Carousell? Come, a boy, a girl, let me tell you.
I think the experience definitely will make a very good, like, storytelling, you know, like, for especially for, like, future generations. Although, I guess now it's a bit too early to say.
Yeah.
All right, then. With that, thanks for leaving us with this very uplifting tone. I think I'll play this sentence, you know, before I sleep every night. Yes, good job, Susan. We all did well. All right, then. Thank you very much for your time today and for sharing your experiences.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Phoebe and the hamsters for joining us today. If you'd like to check out the crafts that Phoebe makes, do check her out at craftybunny.co on Carousel or Instagram. That's crafty with an I.
If you want to find out more about youth's experiences with COVID or hear about similar experiences, Follow us at our social media platforms at Heart to Health Talk. That's at Heart to Health Talk, where additional resources and nuggets of wisdom can be found. Hope to catch you in our next episode. Bye!